Today, we get to see the world through the lens of our friend and photographer, Randy Anglin. Randy doesn't just take pictures. He opens eyes to the unexpected beauty hiding in plain sight. In over four decades, Randy has photographed everything from feet to famous rock stars. His photography teaches us the art of capturing each season of life in the right light and chronicling the timeless beauty that it has to offer. So as you listen, join in on our fun. Grab your camera or phone and snap a photo that reflects the current season of life that you're in. Share us on a social using the tag Beauty Hunters Challenge. See the world in a different light, a world where every moment matters and every detail has a story. He might just change the way you look at things. Hello, creative soul. Welcome to the Beauty Hunters Podcast. Are you feeling stuck? Not having enough time, money, or energy to create? Do you want to make a difference in this world with your creativity, but you feel exhausted by life's responsibilities and void of inspiration? You are not alone.
We are your hosts, Jonathan and Michelle Rose, fellow creative souls who understand the struggle. We once lived a life consumed by the daily grind, leaving us feeling empty and dead inside. And that all changed when we discovered the mindsets and skills that allowed us to stay in creative flow and infuse everyday life with creative passion. We are here with strategies and inspiration to help you fill your daily life with vibrant creativity.
If you are ready to thrive and take your creativity to the next level, then grab your coffee, tune in, and let's create a more beautiful world together. We are here today with our good friend, Randy Anglin. And Randy, I know you best as a photographer, as far as your creative journey goes.
I'm kind of a one-trick pony. I started out as a line artist and with a real interest in cartooning. And so I started, I took a class at the community college in New York and really enjoyed it. It was kind of furthering something that was deep down inside. But then I took a course in photography and I was smitten. When I watched that first print come up in the developer, it was like magic.
Yeah. And what year was that? I'm curious. Because
that was like 78 or something.
Okay.
I think it was around 77 or 78.
Yeah.
And so 45 years.
45 years. So your first experience was back when they had to develop film in the dark.
Oh, yeah. 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 When there was, there was film.
Yeah. When there was film.
But immediately I started getting work. I was still taking that class and people were hiring me to take photos. And I never saw that as a commercial appeal. I never really looked at art as being something that could pay your way. And so photography started out as just an interest. I mean, my first camera was at, I think, 11 or something like that. I was a wee lad.
Yeah. And, it makes me curious. What drew you to the line artist thing to begin with then? If it wasn't necessarily a career path,
all I knew. It looked like photography was really for the elite.
Oh, okay.
I couldn't afford a couple hundred dollar camera. And it seemed to me in the early days that the best photographers were part scientists and part engineers. There was just a lot to learn. You know, there was no auto function on these cameras. You had to know how to expose film. You had to know, I mean, it sure helped to know how to develop it. And, you know, later on, as I progressed, I had my own darkroom and then I had access to a much better darkroom when I was working for the newspaper. And the whole Photoshop thing is really an extension of the darkroom experience. It's just a higher tech. You don't have to be in the dark.
Got it. So a lot of what happened in the dark room obviously has a lot to do with the outcome of the photo and how it presents. So it's one part what you see behind the lens, but then also what happens in the dark room. A lot of
alchemy there. It starts in the eye and the brain. That's where the photo starts. I used to read a lot about photographers because I was trying to learn. And I don't know who it was, but one guy said, when they said, "What's the best lens?" And he says, "The one in my eye." You know, if I could have a lens on my camera, it would be like the one in my eye, what I see. And so, as you become more enamored with the genre and the process, you start to create, you start to see things in the possibilities. Like I'll sit around here in the living room and I'll see the way the light is shining on something and I'll go, oh, that's clever. And then, you know, I'll drag out the camera gear and try to make something that's something nice. I really want to get this in at some point. I've had some very great people in my life who helped shape me. And one of them was a guy from National Geographic named Luis Cihoyos. And I met him. He was working on a geographic process on sleep. And he came to Cornell to photograph, and it's a pretty cool photo. He built a set and he had this model sleeping in a four-poster bed with sheep jumping over the bed.
Like real sheep?
And real sheep. Well, he had stuffed sheep, but he had real sheep milling around. And I said, well, why did you come here to do this? And he said, I heard that Cornell has the best sheep. So anyway, we became friends. He invited me to his place in New York City, and it was only about a four-hour drive, and I would go to New York from time to time. And I came by his place, and I showed him my pitiful portfolio, and I had some flowers in it. And he said, you've really got to show me something different. And that set me on a course to how do you do something different? And I reasoned that one of the ways, I mean, you can use camera angles, you can use the lens choice, you can use the exposure. But one of the, you know, in photography, what we paint with is light.
Yeah.
And I started playing around with light, and I would drag out studio strobes into my yard and start with umbrellas and things like that and start doing that. And then it became almost like an obsession in Nashville. I'm sure my neighbors loved it when I came out in the front yard photographing the calla lilies with the strobes and crawling around on my stomach and things like that. but it really set. And then years later, I acknowledged him and I sent him some photos, and he gave me the high praise of saying, you did it. You got it. This is it.
That's
so
awesome.
That was neat. But it was that word of encouragement. And, you know, he didn't say you suck, but he said, you just gotta, you know, you gotta press in more. And so it's really good to have people in your life who can speak to that. Not all of us have access to, you know, great photographers. Early in the days,
curious, when he put that challenge out to you, like, hey, you've got to do something different. Like, what went on inside of you, or what was the stories just in your own head or in your own process that, like, what did that really do to you or in you or through you?
Well, I don't remember actually.
Okay.
but it did. It caused me to chew on it, to kind of chew my cud, trying to figure out, well, what is, you know, in the process of, you know, I've always been about processes. And what is the process in that? And I mentioned some of the early things, but it just seemed like light really was the key issue.
Now, I've heard it said of photography, and I don't know who to give credit to this for. Maybe you do, but and I'll probably butcher it, but that amateurs look for the best gear, that a professional looks for the best composition, but a master looks for the best light.
That's good. I've never heard that.
I can't take credit for that. And I don't know who to give credit to it for, but I've just heard that about photography. And I was like, that sounds about right. Cause I've known some photographers over the years, and that seems to be the ones that are really doing it on a high level or an artistic level. They seem to talk about the lighting the most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it is a key ingredient. And here where we live, I give a yearly talk, and this year was a couple of weeks ago, and I turned it into a class. I wanted to, a number of people love photography. All they have is their phone or their iPad, and so I gave them some little compositional tricks, but also the notion of proper exposure and shooting in light that's complementary, like early morning light and late afternoon light. It's low lying light. It causes your shadows to go longer, and you get some good darkness. which is an important aspect of photography. You know, noon is like one of the worst times to shoot. But if that's all you have, that's what you have.
Work with it.
The light is paramount.
Yes. So I'm interested in your just kind of the arc of your creative journey. Prior to coming into photography, did you consider yourself creative or have any other creative pursuits or outlets?
Yeah. In school, I was a horrible student. I just was bored with school. But the only thing that I had any aptitude for was art. And I had a couple of really good art teachers who encouraged me and the notion of expression. But like I said, I'd had a camera since I was a little boy. And there's a notion of documenting time. So I did that with my camera. I had a little bitty reel-to-reel that I'd go around and record sounds and people talking. Early on in our church experience in New York, I used to carry some kind of recorder and I would record. And I don't know what it is. There's something about the capture of time that fascinates me. And photography is one of those things. When I worked for a daily newspaper, I always felt like my job was to illustrate whatever the story was, to make a photo so engaging that it caused people to read the story, that was my job. I needed to make something not necessarily literal, but make something go, what the heck is going on here, and want to read the story. And
the invitation.
Yeah. So later on, I started calling myself a plumber because there was a hole that I was filling. That was my job. And then later on, I was professional driver because you can't make pictures if you don't get there. And sometimes that was the issue.
So what are some of the highlights of your photographic career or some of the timeline there? So 78, you were, started.
People caught the bug.
You caught the bug.
I caught the bug, right.
So what have you done in the past 40 years, 45 years?
I should have notes here, but you told me not to. Well, early on,
the most important things.
I saw that shows. I did a year long apprenticeship with this guy in Ithaca who was like a very big fish in a little pond. And so I was at the time working in a salt mine on third shift, and I would get out at 6 a.m. and I'd go to this guy's studio on Friday mornings. And I would clean up and mix developer and do all those things and work for 8 hours in his studio. And he was really big into showing his work and having shows in galleries and stuff. And so I started my very first artistic project was called Notable Feats, F-E-E-T-S. And I photographed the notable people in Ithaca, the district attorney, a hanging judge, a real popular waitress. There was a vintner nearby, a dentist, all these people. And what I did is I photographed their shoes. They provided the shoes and they provided a quote. And I put their shoes in a setting that spoke about their achievement. And I even shot Amelia Earhart's shoes.
Wow.
The Women's Hall of Fame is in Seneca Falls, and that was only up the road about a half an hour, 45 minutes. And they gave me Sally Ride's scarf that she took into space, and I put it around her shoes, and I photographed it in their museum there. But it was like that was my first foray into any kind of display or showing of my work, and it was fun. It's a lot of work, and unless your work is really commercial, it's a lot of money you got to spend. So yeah. I learned that was a valuable lesson that it's like, well, if you want to show your work, that's great, but just make sure somebody else is bankrolling you.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's you're going to go broke on the deal, and then
you're talking about getting off the third shift. And then going to work for a photographer. I mean, there's some hustle and some grind there. Is there an element where it was just the love of the craft was enough to keep you going?
Well, I had a hard time staying awake at times. My very first day in this internship, I'll never forget this. My very first day. So it's like, what's this going to be like? Here's a big league photographer out of New York City who lives in Ithaca now and blah, blah, blah. What's it going to be like? I go to court with him. He was suing his landlord. And I learned, oh, okay. It's not all about making photos.
The real behind the scenes.
Yeah. He's balancing his checkbook while we're sitting there waiting for our case to be called. It was like, oh, yeah, okay. He's using his time effectively. You know, I had all these notes that I made during this court appearance.
Yeah. So what was next?
After that, because of my relationship with him, I started getting known in the town. I started work at Ithaca, New York, has two, or at least it did, have two free newspapers, the Grapevine and the Ithaca Times. And the Ithaca Times was a little more upscale. The Grapevine was a little more kind of agriculturally, but they weren't. They were like a city kind of paper. And so I started working with them. And then I later started working with the Ithaca Times. And while I was there, so I started doing, you know, there's the man on the street, you're shooting sports, you're not shooting very much news other than kind of press release kind of things. And, you know, every now and then somebody would come to Ithaca. I remember Philip Glass came to Ithaca, and the guy that I interned with was a big Robert Mapplethorpe fan. And so Mapplethorpe had photographed had made a portrait of Philip Glass. So I'm talking to him about that. And what I found was in that time, I learned that my best bet was to try to get early, not necessarily photograph the event itself, although do that as a backup, but try to do a portrait beforehand. And Glass was great. He just shifted into professional model mode. And I made a really cool picture. And yes,
so
I ended
so
up,
not just good composer. I love his
yeah,
work.
Yeah, yeah. but he was very helpful, and he probably recognized that I was so green, but very helpful to me. And that kind of set me on a course. I started getting attention from the Syracuse newspaper by way of a reporter who saw my work and was unhappy with the person who was doing the freelance work for the Syracuse. Her name is Frances Dinkelspiel.
What a name.
Yeah, I know. That's why I remember it. But she was very kind. She brought me in, and she was my ticket really to the big league. Working through, and then later on, I got hired by Syracuse. So I would commute the 50 miles daily to go work in Syracuse. And Syracuse, man, was like the big league compared to Ithaca. Syracuse had the Carrier Dome. It had had a minor league baseball team. It had hockey, and world leaders would come there. It was really kind of a cool gig.
And a lot more opportunities, huh?
Yeah. And so through that, I started doing jobs for the Associated Press. I won some awards. One year, I won more awards for the newspaper for Syracuse as a freelancer than any of the staff people. And that was kind of embarrassing to them.
Okay.
But I was a hustler. I really mm-hmm. hustled. And in the early days, Sylvia, my wife, would say, she called photography the mistress. And she would say, well, the mistress won today. And, you know, she's repented of that. She is very
supportive.
She is. But she was right.
So if you were to go back and either encourage or just speak into the life of Randy 45 years ago, what would you say to him in his creative ventures?
Well, one of the things I would say, and I just see this so true, is that be true to yourself. Don't try to emulate anybody. Jim Marshall was a big influence on me. He was the rock and roll photographer that kind of chronicled the 60s and some of the 70s. And I wanted to be the next Jim Marshall. And I had a friend at church sit me down and say, no, you be Randy Anglin. And I never really thought that Randy Anglin had very much merit. But I was fearfully and wonderfully made to be Randy Anglin. I wasn't made to be Jim Marshall. I wasn't made to be Richard Avedon. I wasn't made to be Scavola or any of these great photographers. I was given a task to be me. And so the thing that I would say to a young Randy is, I'd say just really concentrate on being who you are. And that is the hardest thing when you don't know who you are. Mm. You know, you're kind of stumbling around when you're young. You got all this testosterone flowing through you. And it's, you know, you're looking at people that you think are cool and you think are, you know, they've got it under control. And they really don't. Or maybe they do. Maybe they discovered the secret right away. But I could have saved a whole lot of time if I had just forgot about what I thought other people thought of me.
Wow.
And I just stayed, you know, just the knucklehead that I was born to be.
Yeah. And at what point do you think that dawned on you?
A couple of minutes ago, I think. I'm still learning that.
Yeah, I think it's a lifetime of learning for sure.
Well, let me just say that creativity comes in many ways. The other day, I've been so impressed with little moments, tiny moments, and I got in the hot tub the other day, and there was this bee floating in the water. And so I'm really kind of big on bees these days. And so I just put my hand under and I brought him out of the water and I held him. He's drying off and he's kind of climbing over my fingers. And for the next 10 minutes, I was just so enjoying this little bee. And I think it's just like there are thousands of little moments in our life that can have some impact in our life, but we miss them because we don't see them as significant. I could have missed that, but I so enjoyed the moment. And it was like, what does that value? Well, I think it makes my life fuller by doing that. And I think creativity comes in these little moments of just sitting around and seeing light falling on something and going, wow, that's really cool. I think I can make a picture out of it.
Yeah.
It may not be a great picture.
I'm curious, how do you think you strike the balance between knowing when to just be in those moments versus that impulse to just be behind the lens and capture that moment?
Yeah. Sometimes I learned this lesson early on, and I have learned it, that there are moments that I think God wants us to enjoy, not to make this a super religious or anything, but that are not to be captured. And it used to frustrate me to no end because I wanted to capture everything. And then I felt like he said, this is just for your eyes only. This is just for you to enjoy. You don't have to make a picture of it. And that was so freeing. That was just like, okay, well, there are times that I don't have to make a picture, but I want to.
Right. So it was a gift for you. And then there's sometimes that it's a gift for you to give away.
Now, Now, are you conscious of any ways that that has enhanced or carried over into the creativity when you are behind the lens?
I don't know that I can put a finger on that. I don't know that there is. I know that my stress level and anxiety is much lower now. Some of that's better living through chemistry, but some of it is actually just resting in the moment and enjoying. You know, I always felt like I had to be doing something, and now I just can be.
When we were talking to you guys in Florida,
right?
Something you said caught my attention, and I don't know exactly what it was, but the general sense of the conversation was that you were just talking about just how things ebb and flow through the different seasons of life.
Mm.
And
yeah, I call it chapters.
Chapters. Yeah.
So we all have these different times that based on where we are, our stage of a development, and you know, many different considerations, what we're really good at and what we want to do. You know, I may have mentioned Michael Jordan as an example of somebody who was, you know, one of the greatest basketball players ever lived. But then when that was over, what did he do? You know, there's this that chapter had ended. And we all have these things. There was a time that I was a rock and roll photographer where I was shooting for magazines and record companies. And I loved it. Sylvia used to call me her rock and roll husband.
Yeah.
And I just had these wonderful experiences. It was like living the dream. And then it was over. And so,
who did you photograph? Which one are you most proud of or most notable or memorable?
I don't know. There's a lot of them. But, you know, Eric Clapton and Jerry Garcia and Eddie Van Halen. And, you know, a lot of people you've never heard of but were real heroes to me. Michael Hedges, just a lot of jazz. Kenny Burrell, who used to play with Miles Davis, Jorma Kaukonen, who was with Jefferson Airplane and with Hot Tuna. Steve Morris is probably. There were two guitarists who really helped me to kind of come into the fold, and Steve Morris was one of them, and Phil Kagi is the other. Both of these guys just welcomed me in and let me be with them and photograph them again and again and again, and gave me all access. And so what that did is it opened doors for Guitar Player magazine, which was one of the first of the guitar oriented magazines. And I was reading this. I've never been a player. I've never been a guitarist. I've had guitars, but I just lack any discipline. But I was reading this back in the 70s when it first came out, because I wanted to know about these people that I was listening to. And so Kagi and Morris both really allowed me access into a world where I could shoot people. And then Guitar Player gave me a series that I did for a while called Hand Jive, where I photographed the hands of guitarists, and you were supposed to guess who it was, and you flipped a few pages and you see that. And in those pages, you would see Keith Richards, you would see, you know, a lot of blues guys and jazz guys and rock guys and B.B. King. And so, you know, once you start, you get into a certain level in that stratosphere of rockdom, people don't say no to you. If they know they're going to be running in the premier magazine, they're going to give you access. And so that was great. And then the art director who was there, who was just really a great help, Rich Leeds is his name. He left, and then a new guy came in, and I just didn't have the clout that I used to have. And also, the bean counters kind of took over, and people who were who bought the magazine published a number of farm magazines and stuff, and they. Huh. They just kind of changed things around. They had little, smaller.
You didn't
budget.
Want to go shoot John Deere's?
No. Well, I have actually. John Deere's and Alma's. Yeah, yeah. I shot international. But, I shot a lot of tractors.
But man, shooting some big names like that seems like a pretty glamorous season. And then it just ends.
It was. Yeah. And then it ends. And it coincided with my move to Nashville.
Interesting. Okay.
Music City.
So what did all that ebb and flow teach you about seasons?
That it's really important to be in the season that you're in and not trying to hang on the season you came from.
Okay.
So that, good. That, yeah,
that's good advice.
That this is something that God has ordained for every person ever living or will live. That there are times when you learn to crawl. There's times when you learn to walk. There's times when you learn to run. There's times when you're developing as a human being who's fearfully and wonderfully made in the image of God. And getting back to that, be Randy. You know, one of my frequent prayers is, Lord, help me be the best Randy I can be.
Yeah.
And another one of those prayers is, Lord, I want to make you smile today.
Yeah.
So are you ready for your fancy question?
Well,
now?
You're like psyching him out.
No.
Anyways,
no, I'm nervous.
I'll set the stage. I want to start a creative justice league, or the Avengers of creatives, right?
Marvel team.
So
yeah.
If you were to have a superhuman or mutant creative ability, what would your creative ability be as a creative superhero? Take as much time as you need.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I would like to see, again, bringing the spirituality aspect back, I would like to be able to see as God sees, to be able to see the heart, to see, you know, I'll look at somebody and I know they're going through some hard times and I don't know what it is. And some people in the prophetic world, they can dial their mail up. They know exactly what it is. I don't. And for some reason, I've not been given that ability. But that's, I would want to do that because I'd really like to be able to, with few words if possible, bring hope to people. Yeah. Because right now, we're in a really dark time. It says in Isaiah that, you know, darkness covers the earth and deep darkness covers the people. And I think we're beginning to see what deep darkness looks like. And it says, I think it's in Matthew, it says that because the love of many grows cold. Wait a minute, the heart, how does it go? Because of, oh, dang. the love of many grows cold because of some reason. I don't know what it is. Stitch in time saves nine. there's an aspect of the hopelessness that is when you're watching the evening news, when you're seeing how there doesn't seem to be justice. There seems to be anti-justice, and the good are punished and the bad are exalted. And that's what I think causes many to lose hope. And so I guess if I could have a superpower, it would be to be able to look into the lives and to speak hope to people.
So
now,
good.
I don't know if that's too spiritual or not, but that,
you know,
that really
you
is.
Get to it's, be Randy England
you
today.
You get to be Randy England, and that's who Randy England is. But you know what? That's so close to the heart of beauty hunting,
that's
where
exactly.
We are just trying to partake of the beauty that's around us. And yeah, we encounter those stories that on their face aren't beautiful, but when we touch that human element of who that person is or what they're going through, mm-hmm. and maybe we're bearing witness to some piece of sadness, or maybe we're bringing dignity to some scarred piece of their life that no one's brought dignity to before. That's
right.
Beautiful.
And bring, you know, even that, to be able to see the hope is beauty.
And that
hunting.
Makes the world a more beautiful place. That's beauty hunting right there.
That's right. Wow, I think you win the award today. So do you have a title? Do you have a title?
And what would
that?
Your superhero name be then?
Oh, my title. Insight Man.
Insight
there
Man.
There you go. Which goes back to you saying like you're the lens.
Through the lens of Randy England.
Yeah. So good.
Is there a way people can view some of your work? Is there
follow you.
A webpage or a
social
media account that
have,
people can check out some
Instagram,
of your photography?
Instagram and Flickr. I have a lot of my music stuff is on Flickr.
Man, we have enjoyed being with you so much.
Yeah,
I've enjoyed
this conversation.
Tell Sylvia we're sorry we missed her, but we definitely.
Thank you for joining us on the Beauty Hunters podcast. I hope this episode has encouraged you. If so, would you please take 30 seconds and share it with other creatives in your life? And please leave a quick written review on Apple Podcasts. Your reviews keep us inspired and help more people discover the podcast. Okay, time for us to hit the road. We're off to our next art show. We'll meet you back on Monday for another episode.
Until our next encounter, always remember that your creativity will make the world a more beautiful place.